you. I'm not talking about all the constraints. I will basically focus on constraints from microwave and far infrared observations. And I think it's what is getting more interesting these days, so I will focus on this. And part of what I'm going to tell was discussed in this conference in Sesto last year. This was an astrophysical conference. Okay, so and I'm going to try to do it kind of in general introductory way. So we are talking basically about two fundamental constants, alpha and Me over Mp, which are relevant to atomic physics. This constant can be related to the ratio of Me over lambda QCD, which is more fundamental thing than proton mass. Actually, there is also nuclear G factors involved as long as we are talking about hyperfine structure. But I will not discuss possible variation of that because I will mostly speak about vibrational, rotational, lambda doubling transitions and so on. So the hyperfine structure is a small correction to that. So we cannot bother about this last term here. But in general, we can say that atomic frequency or molecular frequency can be related to the possible variation of these constants through the sensitivity coefficients, which are dimensionless here, and which have to be calculated. Theoretically, you cannot measure them because we don't have a handle to change constants. All right, so these come from the theory, and then we can link the fractional variation of frequency to the fractional variation of this synthetic parameter, which includes all constants to the powers, which are these sensitivity coefficients. In fact, what we are measuring is not this ratio, but we are actually comparing at least two different frequencies, and this ratio depends on the difference of sensitivity coefficients for numerator and denominator. So what we actually want to have, we want to have at least two frequencies with different sensitivities, not just big, but different. That is important. Here is what we have in astrophysics. In terms of these sensitivities, because what we are actually observing there is relatively light atoms, ions, and molecules built of them, then relativistic corrections are quite small. They scale as alpha squared, z squared, and they are much smaller than non-relativistic part of the energy. So for optical waveband, all three sensitivities are much less than unity. And this is what you have when you do optical observations in astrophysics. And this is different from laboratory frequency measurements where you can go to really heavy species like Mercury, for example, and you can look at transitions between excited states, for example, or something, where you can have really high sensitivities to alpha variation in optical wavelength. In astrophysics, it's not the case. And also, I want to emphasize that these dimensionless sensitivities are exactly what we are interested in astrophysics, because the accuracy of frequency measurements there is independent, basically independent on the waveband, because the line width divided by the frequency is just delta V over C, where delta V is velocity distribution in the gas we are looking at. So it's the same whatever waveband we are looking for. In UV and in microwave, delta V, delta omega to omega is the same. So that means that our, of course, there's sensitivity, signal to noise, things like that. But basically, in any frequency domain, we have the same accuracy in fractional measurement of frequencies. So we really need the big sensitivity coefficients here. So optics is not so good in this sense. When we go to lower frequencies in infrared and in far infrared, we have fine structure transitions, which scale as alpha squared. So that means that sensitivity to alpha is equal to 2, which is good. Then about the same frequency domain is where we observe molecular vibrational spectra, which are independent on alpha, up to some small corrections, but they scale as square root of mu. So we have sensitivity to mu equal to 1/2. Rotational structure has sensitivity to mu equal to 1. And then magnetic hyperfine is sensitive to all three with these sensitivities. And now we have more exotic cases like tunneling transitions in polar atomic molecules. And today we already heard about the most famous tunneling transition. It's the amazing transition in ammonia, which is 23 gigahertz. And this is a tunneling transition, what is called an umbrella mode. So it's a kind of top which can flip over. And this tunneling is, of course, sensitive to the mass which is tunneling. And this is the nuclear mass. So the sensitivity for ammonia in ammonia tunneling transition is something like 4.5. So it's a few times bigger than anything here. And that makes it good. But there are a bunch of other molecules like H2O2 and methanol, which is currently the most interesting species, I think, because and several others. They are all observed in interstellar medium. But tunneling sensitivities lie in this range because the biggest sensitivities come for lower tunneling frequencies, but sensitivity is proportional to the logarithm of this tunneling frequency. So to get more than 10, you need to go to unobservably low frequencies. So you cannot have bigger than, actually it's 6 or something, I think, the highest sensitivity we have for pure tunneling transitions. But what we can have mixed tunneling rotational lines. And this is when you have tunneling transition and you have rotational transition, and you make a mixed transition when these energies go in the opposite direction. So the transition you are looking at is a difference between rotational and tunneling energy. And in this case, you can get higher sensitivity, and also the sensitivity will be of different sign depending on which part is bigger. This or this case give you different signs of sensitivity coefficients. So you can have sensitivities on the order of like 30 or 50 plus or minus. So the difference in sensitivity can be almost 100. That makes these mixed tunneling rotational lines extremely interesting. And finally, you can also observe in diatomic radicals, you can have lambda doublets or omega doublets or K doublets in polar atomic linear molecules, in which case you have high sensitivities to both alpha and mu, and I will show you some examples in the end of the talk. But first, I just want to show you an example of this mixed tunneling rotational transition for ethylene glycol, which is a rather complex molecule, but still it is observed in interstellar medium. And the reason I'm giving you, because it's the most recent example, not the most important. But here you have this is the rotational spectrum, and these are tunneling doublets. So solid lines and dotted lines correspond to two doublet, to this doubling splitting. So these are examples of mixed transitions where sensitivities are shown in green here. And you see that you have something from minus 9 here, minus 6 here, plus 4 here, something like that. In fact, a little bit higher, you have even bigger sensitivities up to plus minus 20. And this is comparable to other species. So this is how this molecule looks like. So there are these two OH parts on the ends of the molecule. There's hydrogenic bond here, and this is a degenerate configuration. And tunneling takes place between these two. Right, so this is an example.
So the whole thing goes...
No. It's either this OH or it flips like this. Right. So the similar cases are for ethanol, where you have CH3 top and OH kind of OH flag on top of this top. And this flag can look in three different directions. And again, you have this rotational tunneling. Okay, so this is what we have at the moment. Actually, this is a little bit outdated, but it gives you a feeling of what you have in optical wave band here for mu variation. It's delta mu over mu. This is the redshift here, and the scale is 10 to minus 6, 10 to minus 5, basically, here, right? And this is 0. So optical lines are observed for high redshifts, and this is an advantage if we are talking about time variation. But you see that sensitivity in microwave, and this is this is NH3, which is a pure tunneling line, but this is methanol, and actually the most stringent limit now comes from ethanol, and it's not shown here. You wouldn't see it, actually. So you see that the error bars in optics are much bigger, though they don't scale exactly with the sensitivities, because here you have like hundreds of lines. Each dot here corresponds to observation of hundreds of lines for a particular quasar. And then the whole thing is averaged. Here you just observe, in case of ammonia, you just observe one tunneling transition. And you observe one or a couple of reference transitions, which are pure rotational transitions. In methanol, you observe several mixed tunneling rotational transitions, which is better, but it's 3-4. So here you have some averaging, which helps you a little. And now this is the most recent result with methanol obtained by Bogdanaita and others in 2013. And what we have here, this is velocity Doppler shift in terms of V over C as a function of sensitivity coefficient to mu variation. So in astrophysics, they usually connect frequency directly to the velocity. Just they assume that all shifts are just Doppler shifts. So this is how they prefer to plot it. On this plot, if there were any variation of mu, it would lead to a slope. This is what they claimed here, that it's perfectly zero, but maybe you would argue that it's rather like this. But they, for some reason, they preferred not to include this on the average, which is presented here already in terms of delta mu over mu. But this slope is within the arrow bars here.
I'm totally confused by this plot. I'm sorry. K mu is the sensitivity?
K mu is, yes. It's these guys use MP over ME, proton to electron mass ratio.
All these systems are at the same ratio.
So they are supposedly from the same gas with the same redshift. So you would expect the same Doppler shift. But if there is correlation between observed Doppler shift with sensitivity coefficient, then it actually can be interpreted in terms of this. Okay, so that would mean mu dependence, or this would mean mu dependence. This means no mu dependence. So this is, you see, on the level of 10 to minus 7, delta mu over mu. And once again, this is within the error bars. So
do they know the velocity for one particular species better?
This is the same. All points here correspond to four different lines of the same species. It's methanol. But you see, these are E-type transitions. This is A-type transition. And that actually means that this corresponds to orta species and those three to para species, or vice versa. I don't quite remember. But in astrophysics, collisions are so rare that orta never flips to para. So they may behave like different species. So that was the reason why these guys decided not to include this when they average. But this is something rather questionable. Anyway, this is the best current limit on mu variation on the time scale of the age of the universe. That corresponds to redshift 0.9, which means something like 6 billion years, so half of the lifetime of the universe. Okay, so now...
Is it one direction in the sky or average over the sky?
Yeah. Unfortunately, up to now, we have basically only two objects in the sky where we observe these microwave transitions at high redshifts. It's 0.7 and 0.9. So these are just two points in the sky. It's not like in optics where you have lots of quasars. Here it's Lensing geometry, when quasar is there and there's something exactly on your line of sight. So what you observe is absorption of this quasar light by this interstellar gas of some galaxy right on your light of sight. So there's only two objects up to now, but things are changing very rapidly here. The 3 years ago, ammonia was the only molecule which was observed at high redshifts. Now there's 15 or 20, including three or four with these mixed tunnel and rotational transitions. Now I want to switch to infrared fine structure transition in neutral carbon at much higher redshift, 5.2. And this was done by Lipshakov and co-authors. This is the spectrum which was observed for this object. Again, it's the single object. And what is these two features here correspond to this fine structure transition in neutral carbon, while these two features correspond to the rotational transition of CO molecule. And you see that here we have narrow feature and wide feature, here we have narrow feature and wide feature. So it looks like it's like two clouds, one smaller which produces a narrower feature probably, another broader with a broader velocity distribution which produced this feature. So on this plot, what was done? The carbon part was just shifted to fit the CO part, and then it was scaled. And you see that indeed the profiles are very similar. So that, I think, at least it convinced me that this comes from the same gas. So you can assume that Doppler shift is the same and use this to derive the limit on fundamental constants. This is plot for velocity distribution between these two, and you see that it's centered on zero velocity offset, maybe plus one a little bit shifted to the right, but the width here is 10 kilometers, much bigger than the shift. This is what can be derived from this plot. And because we are comparing fine structure transition, which scales as alpha squared, to rotational transition, which scales as mu, so we are actually looking at variation of this combination. And this single observation gives us this limit on the variation of F parameter at redshift 5.2. And this is, again, this is not a record, but if we compare it to optics, and here I show you famous Australian dipole plot from this paper, right? And this red line, which corresponds to the dipole. And this is the single, this single point just corresponds to that previous slide where we assumed that alpha is not, that mu is not changing, and then that limit transforms into alpha variation limit. So this is assumption that mu is not changing, and from tunneling transitions we know that mu is not changing on the level two orders of magnitude smaller. So this is a rather natural assumption. So we get this single point here, and it's just a lucky coincidence that this single point was almost in the direction of this Australian dipole. So we don't lose much on this cosine. So the distance, this Z5.2, transforms into something 13 billion years. And this is, you see, this is like 11 billion years. So cosine is almost 1. So this is almost in the direction of the dipole. And again, if we compare to these dots from optical observations, each of them corresponds to the averaging of the results for something like 20 different quasars. And for each quasar, they observed like 10 or 20 lines. So it's like a couple of hundred lines were averaged to get a single point here. And this is just one line here, or basically two lines. Right, so that again gives you the ratio of sensitivities. And another thing that this arrow bar here in optics, the scale is 10 to minus 5 here, but remembering that sensitivities are on the order of 10 to minus 2 in optics, that corresponds to frequency accuracy, 10 to minus 7, which is very questionable, in fact, if you can do it with modern telescopes. Without any,
so you doubt whether or
I'm not in a position to. I'm not a specialist, but there are concerns, and different groups do not agree on the way how to treat systematics there, and they are now switching to optical comms, but it's not done yet. So after that, they will probably have much better accuracy in measuring frequencies.
Instead of thorium argon?
Yes. Is it thorium argon or just... they just use some standard spectrum imprinted there. Okay, so that's about the dipole. And now I switch to the shorter distances. That was variation of constants on the cosmological timescale. And now I'm talking about something like chameleon models, or if you like, maybe oscillations or whatever. And now we are talking about observation of ammonia and CH in our galaxy. The timescale here is a couple of hundred years to 1,000 years. So it's really a nearby vicinity of even of our galaxy. So what we are testing?
200 light years?
Hmm?
200 light years?
From 200 to 1,000 light years, yeah. Now we have extremely narrow, very nice lines of ammonia. This time it's not absorption, it's emission. It's just a gas which has a typical temperature of 10 Kelvin and the density of 10 to the 5 per cubic centimeter. So it many, many orders of magnitude from what we have in the laboratory. And chameleons are supposed to be sensitive to the local matter density. So you can expect that fundamental constants now may depend on the local matter density. And these dense molecular clouds in astrophysics are like 10 orders of magnitude less dense than laboratory vacuum you have. Okay, so you can test this. And I will show you, yeah, these are the telescopes which were used, and most of the analysis was done by Lipshakov and co-authors. So this is the biggest telescope in Effelsberg. And here are the species they were observing. So all of them observed ammonia, and as a reference was either HC3N or HC5N, HC7N, and N2H+. So different reference molecules were used, and on the order of 100 different molecular cores. They prefer to talk about cores, not about clouds. Cloud is something bigger, and you have dense cores in this cloud where you can actually have strong signal to noise, good lines. So there, here is an example of ammonia inversion line. So you see they have very narrow lines. This is hyperfine structure, well resolved. The width corresponds to 200 meters per second, again in astrophysical units. And they hope they can measure the position of these lines up to 1 meter per second with the signal to noise is something like 30. And this is the reference line, HC3N, slightly smaller signal to noise, 24, but lines are narrower, and the accuracy is supposed to be 5 meters per second, which includes also the error from laboratory frequency. On this scale, we are talking about the frequency accuracy on the scale of 10 to minus 7, 10 to minus 8. And for ammonia, we do have it because, as it was mentioned already today, ammonia was at some point considered as a possible frequency standard. So there were accurate measurements for ammonia, but not that accurate for this guy. So there is something like 3 meters per second accuracy, the error from laboratory measurement. So this is just another measurement of the same thing. And this is one particular molecular core. This is a different molecular core. This is, again, the same one, but taken a year later. So you see that the quite nice spectra. And this is what they got from the analysis, which was done back in 2010. They actually did the cross-section through this molecular core for this guy and for that guy. So they made a cross-section. The ovals here correspond to angular resolution of the telescope. And this is what they got. The red plot correspond to ammonia, blue to this HC3N. And you see there is a velocity offset of something like 30 meters per second. Here and the same here. It's a slightly different scale, but it's again something like 30 meters. So results from these, the analysis of these two plots gave this velocity offset of 27 meters per second, plus minus one statistical, plus minus three systematic. And this is basically laboratory accuracy. And that converts into 26 plus minus 1 plus minus 3 parts per billion in delta mu over mu. So it's strong non-zero signal. And that actually confirmed result of the previous year when measurements were done just at the center of these two. So the statistics was lower, but otherwise it was just the same. So that was very exciting. The signal on the scale of 3 times 10 to minus 8. Right? But this is what happened later. So they started to study it more accurately, and that what happened when they remeasured it in 2011. You see the dotted curves up curves from previous year, and now they are almost matched together. The same happened for another core, and you see maybe that was a domain wall. So that was a question. Up to that point, they didn't have any concerns about telescope stability, because it was assumed for decades that the telescope can measure frequencies to 10 to minus 8. This actually showed that there may be something. So they started, and they used this kind of spectrometer at the telescope. So they started just to measure ammonia, the single ammonia line, for a long period of time. So you see there's a 30-minute scan and 150 seconds per each point, and there were four different runs on the telescope time. And actually, these are huge telescopes. There are only two of them in the world. So you need to apply for the time, and to get 2 hours is really as much as you can hope. So you see that what they saw here, that there are some fluctuations of the frequency on the level of something like 10 meters per second. So there is and they actually, I think they used different spectrometer here. So in the end, they came up with the conclusion that there is some systematics on the scale of 10 meters per second. So all they can claim is this upper limit on the variation on the scale of 2.
So the limit is better than the non-zero result?
No, no, no. It's yeah. They a little. They improved a little compared to what they had. Okay. Can I go back? I'm not sure. Right. So after they measured here, they actually got a little better. Okay. Now I need to go this way. Okay, so that's what they claim at the moment. But this was done. Mm-hmm. This was done with ammonia, and methanol is, as I told you, is at least an order of magnitude more sensitive. So you can actually probably do better. And if you work out this systematic, you can also probably improve. Now, just a couple of words about lambda doublets. And this is a high-order effect in Bohr-Oppenheimer perturbation theory. So it depends on both spin-orbit interaction and Coriolis interaction. So there's kind of peculiar dependence on the fundamental constants. Here is how frequency of omega doublets depend on a rotational quantum number. And here are sensitivities. Triangles are sensitivities to mu variation, and circles correspond to sensitivity to alpha variation. So you see it's minus 8 here, plus 6 here. And these three transitions actually were observed from interstellar medium. So you can use 6 points here. Each frequency have sensitivity to 2 parameters, right? So in principle, you can have the complete experiment. Unfortunately, the laboratory frequencies for these transitions, and this is one frequency, 0.7, gigahertz and 3.3 gigahertz here, they were not measured to sufficiently high accuracy in the laboratory. So the group in Imperial College did this job. They used this Ramsey type experiment with molecular beam, and they came up with these frequencies, which are accurate to 1 part per billion for the higher frequency and 10 parts per billion for the lower frequency, which is kind of more than order of almost 2 orders of magnitude improvement compared to what was known before. So after that, they just reanalyzed published spectra from the astrophysics. It was published back in late 70s, I think. So there were like five objects observed where CH was observed. In four cases, only this 3.3 gigahertz line was observed. But in one object, they observed both lines here. For these three, they used as a reference OH transitions. And they came up with this these limits on delta alpha over alpha and delta mu over mu, which are on the scale you see, few times 10 to minus 7. And again, this is just using published data from a long time ago. So now there are several projects running to improve these observations. So probably we can hope for more accurate results soon. So these are my conclusions. So I think that these days there is definite shift from optical to microwave and infrared observations as more sensitive to variation of constants. And we can actually look both large cosmological time scale and something in the galaxy which is sensitive to chameleons or maybe to something else if you like, if you can do the real time measurements or So I think it's quite exciting, and I'm sure that we can hope for significant improvement in sensitivity just in few coming years. Thank you.
Any questions?
So the second line there, John Webb would disagree, right?
On Australian. John Webb probably. Yeah, but okay, I think he agrees that there is some kind of controversy. He has arguments. Opponents have their arguments, and it stands for many years now.
Oh, the special of the dipole thing.
Yeah, the dipole. But initially they had just variation, right? Then they compared observations from two telescopes and came up with the dipole, right? Yeah. But no other groups saw this effect. Right.
Is there anything useful about the 21 centimeter line being that it's so universally observed in terms of these kind of measurements?
Of course. So it's hyperfine, so it's sensitive to all three. And it's also the good thing is that it is so common.
Right.
But it's also the bad thing, because hydrogen is distributed in much bigger volumes. So the lines are much wider typically. So they are kind of an order of magnitude wider than these kind of rare species which come from these cores or something. And also hydrogen is lighter, so the temperature width is also bigger. So hydrogen is kind of gives you limited sensitivity.
So one more question. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just to check if I understand it correctly. I think the interest we had in recent years about this search for the variation of alpha and time was motivated by this astrophysical observation. Now, except for some group, we have no evidence for that. So I think now it becomes more important to have some theoretical justification to go on the experimental search. Otherwise, what was a strong motivation in my
opinion? Yeah, of course, this non-zero observation was really important to attract attention to this field and a lot of people. Though, it's not that everything started from that. Actually, first observations were done before Webb came with this non-zero result. There were observations on variation of mu at that point mostly. Hydrogenic, that's what I showed on that slide where hydrogen spectrum was used for that. So, but of course, the it attracted a lot of attention, and that was good to the field. But now, I think the fact that they cannot actually sit together and agree on how to interpret the spectra, this is a bad thing.
So it's between the New South Wales and Paris team? I mean,
there are two or three different teams. Yeah, so it's basically
the same data?
Some of the data is the same. The original data the web group is using is still not available for public. It's from private telescope. So nobody else saw the raw data. The rest of the data is available, and Murphy is analyzing the same spectra as Shannon is analyzing, and they get slightly different results. Up to this, either there is effect or no. It's exactly. They're basically analyzing the same spectra.
Yeah, there's a question.
So maybe actually connected somehow, perhaps I'm the only one who doesn't quite understand it here. But so you mentioned that there is this kind of dark energy chameleon model, which sort of.
Yeah, so we were
so
actually. Yeah, that, so Maxim suggested this chameleon. there are kind of a bunch of chameleon type models, but one particular was suggested.
There can be a situation when an ambient matter density shifts the couplings through again some wide scale fields. So you can have a situation where in the low density environment you will have one value.
It's a kind of lamp shift type effect, or.
No, you need a new scalar field, right? You need some new fields, right?
Then
say you have a medium potential in medium and potential in vacuum that are shifted by a finite distance and this in the field space. This way you can have one minimum in the high density environment and different minimum in low density environment. In these models, what they're worth, you will have a difference between, these measurements in these clouds are really low density environments, right? And the measurements in the lab are, well, in the gas, whatever, in the lab, it's high density environment. So this was the model to show that it actually makes sense to, not necessarily going after the highest Z to get like the shift in time, right? But it could be a shift between us and low density environment near us in our galaxy, where and not necessarily going to high Z will lead to a larger impact.
So in
and it goes under the name of chameleon.
Right. So in zero density, this field is massless, but.
Not necessarily. You have variance, right? I mean,
you need large contributions when you have maybe not zero the mass, but at least you need huge contributions to the mass when it
goes
through some density.
Okay, so the mass of this scalar field changes depending on the, and it's kind of fifth fourth. This scalar field is like fifth fourth. But because it develops a relatively large mass in the high density environment, you don't see it as a long range fifth force here in the lab.
So force between, it's like mediated force between molecules, mediated by
between everything.
The trick is to take some interaction terms that scale like pi squared times the say density, which gives only one over R cubed potential rather than one over R. Also.
Not only that, sometimes even if you have a linear term, because the mass changes, for example, if you want to test the force between two spheres, because the mass of the particle is very high during the mass, it only the interaction is determined only by the surface, not the bulk of the sphere. Mm-hmm. So it's very hard to constrain forces mediated by chameleon models.
But these are fundamentally atom interactions
for
mediated by something else, or is it
So is it like more like length shift, or is it more?
There is an idea that there is a like a gravitational potential that varies,
so
right?
It is,
so it is
a background
yes.
that varies, and
yeah.
it takes one value in the high density environment and slightly different value in the low density environment
mm-hmm.
can be arranged, and on top of this, it renormalizes
values.
So
why can't you just take like two atoms?
Yes.
Yes, you can.
But
yeah.
the statement is that you can the limits from that are known, right? And then coming from accurate measurements of the gravitational force between atoms, and these are not prohibitively strong.
Yeah.
Right. There was also there were also experiments with lasers because this chameleon field is also coupled to photons. So they just used a cavity with very strong laser field, and they assumed that part of it was converted into chameleons. Then they switched off the field, the laser, and looked for afterglow.
Even within this class of model, there are many sub-models.
Right. So it's
what we're considering was not that, but you know, it's some other groups.
I just wanted to point out that
mm-hmm.
yeah, you can think about laboratory experiments to test these models as well.
So shall we go to the other session? Let's end this. Let's talk about speaking.